Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf Samech Dalin. We are starting from the Gemara we did yesterday. Today's daf, first half of today's daf, is going to be about Tumah Tahara. And then the second part of today's daf continues back to the discussion of what a woman can and cannot wear. I remember one of the lessons we discussed yesterday was the biris and the kavlas. Biris and kavlas are two things worn by women. The Mishnah taught us, I'm back on Samech Gimel Amud Aleph, that a woman on Shabbos can go out with a biris and a woman on Shabbos cannot go out with a kavlam. What's the difference between the two? First of all, what are they? So the biris is a garter, it holds up her socks. The kavlam are chains that are tied between the two garters in order to shorten her stride. The Gemara yesterday explained what would be the function and purpose that a woman would want to shorten her stride. In the meantime, however, the Mishnah tells us that regarding the biris, a woman can go out with it on Shabbos. It's accessories to her clothing, and the kavlam, no woman may not go out with it on Shabbos. Good. Give me a moment. And the Gemara points out that this is a pshat that was said over by Rabbi Yirmi, and Rabbi Yirmi also said it over in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, and we are now on Samech Gimel Amud Beis. We're about 20 lines from the bottom of the Amud, and the Gemara now will start off. Ki also Rav Dimi Amar Rav Yochanan Minayin La'ari Kol Shehu Shutameh. Now the Gemara is going to have a discussion. This is going to be a long discussion, and it's going to take us basically through the entire first Amud of today's Daf, Samech Dal Amud Aleph. And the question is, when we have something which is woven, so a woven item of any shear is going to be susceptible to tumah. Now, how do we know that? We know that from the tzitz. Now, that's a little bit strange because, as we know, the tzitz is one of the eight begadim that's worn by the Kohen Gadol, and the tzitz is worn on the fort of the Kohen Gadol, but what's weird is that the tzitz is made out of metal, specifically gold. So we're now talking about a source for the size of a woven garment, and we're learning it from the tzitz. Well, the woven garment is a fabric, and the tzitz is made out of gold. And immediately the Gemara says, I don't know what you're talking about. Amalei Abayi v'tzitz arigu? Well, what are you talking about? The tzitz is not something which is woven. V'atanya tzitz kemen tashel zav v'rochav shtei etzbaos. The tzitz is 2 etzbaos wide. It's 2 inches wide. Worn on the forehead of the Kohen. U'mukav mi'ozen lo'ozen, and it goes from ear to ear. It's a headband. V'kosav ala be'beishita. Now it says on 2 rows, yud hei lamala, v'kodesh lamed lamata. Meaning it spells out the words kodesh la'hashem, and the Shem Hashem is written on the line above, and the word Kodesh and the word Lamed are written on the line below, and you can see Rashi, and you can see Tosfos, and there's a disagreement between the Rishonim exactly how the words Kodesh LaHashem are spelled out, but it's on 2 separate lines. Rami Rabbi Elazar Rav Yossi, and we see Rami Rabbi Elazar Rav Yossi gives us testimony that he goes to the city in Rome because of Kodesh LaHashem Bishita Achas. And he saw the head plate of the Kohen Gadol, the tzitz, and it was written Kodesh Hashem on one line. So, one of those strange scenarios where we have a machlokas, and one position is validated by the fact that he actually saw the tzitz. Whatever the case is, the point being is that the tzitz is made out of gold. So, now we're going back to our original statement. Well, how do you know that anything woven is susceptible to tumah, regardless of the size? Because we learn it from the tzitz, but the Gemara says, come on. Tzitz is made out of gold, and we're talking about woven items.
Is that the premise? Tzitz never gets tumah because they actually remove tumah from other things, no?
The tzitz is meratzeh. It doesn't remove tumah. It makes karbanos with... It's a good question. It makes karbanos that are tameh okay, but it doesn't remove the tumah. Because he telegraphed demon lenar adashach lehu dvarim she'amati lachem tawasem biyadi. So Rav Dimi goes to Narada, and he sends the following. He says, I made a mistake, meaning you're absolutely right. An arig, a woven garment, and it says, have nothing to do with one another. I erred. Baruch Kachamru Mishum Rav Yochanan. So this is how it goes. Minayin l'tachshe kol shehu tameh mitzitz. In other words, once something defines itself as an article of jewelry, a ring, a bracelet, whatever the case is, size doesn't matter. Meaning, in other areas of Tumah Tahara, there's a minimum shear. So when it comes to, what's it called? A kli, I don't know about a kli. But when it comes to an article of clothing, when it comes to a source of Tumah, So you need a minimum shear. By mace, you need a kazayis. By sheretz, you need an adasha. By a certain, by a piece of a swatch of, not fabric, but a swatch of leather. It needs to be, in other words, everything needs a minimum shear. But when it comes to a kli tachshir, when it comes to jewelry, any shear. How do I know that? Because we learn from the tzitz. Good. And now we're comparing metal to metal. That's great. And then, now how do I know that anything woven, any amount of size is going to be tummy? Me'o begin. We learn it from the pasuk of O begin, which is said in conjunction with Tumas Sheretz. Tana Rabbanan. And now the Gemara is going to use this as a launching pad for basically a discussion of what's included in Tumas Sheretz and what's included in Tumas Mates. Now again, as I mentioned already, this is going to take us through the almost the entire Amud Aleph of today's daf. So just fasten your seatbelt. I'm going to go through this slightly quicker than I would normally go because, quite honestly, the Gemara's the points that the Gemara is going to make, we can summarize in about three sentences. When I get through the entire Gemara, I will summarize everything in about three sentences. But you know how the Gemara works. The Gemara's methodology is that it goes through arguments after Kavachomer, then goes through Gzeira Shava, explaining how the Gzeira Shava is fortified. So in other words, the process of the Gemara, you know how this works. So here we begin. Tana Rabbanan. Ari kol shehu tamei, v'tachshir kol shehu tamei. If I have a woven fabric, so any amount of it is going to be susceptible to tumah. If I have a jewelry, any amount of it is going to be susceptible to tumah. Most of sakal abegit shetameh mishum arig. Now sackcloth. Now sackcloth is anything made out of goat hair. Okay, the sackcloth is normally worn by the mourner, but as we learned a couple days ago, could also be worn by the shepherd, and not limited to the mourner. But in other words, the sackcloth is something made out of goat hair. It is tameh mishum arig. Now it's going to be susceptible to tumah. More so than the woven fabric. So I'm a Rava, I recall Shu Tamei. Rava goes on to explain. And every point of this price is going to be delved into. So we start off, I'm a Rava, I recall Shu Tamei, may O Beged. So the fact that the woven fabric is Tamei with any amount is learned from the Pasuk of O Beged, O being the extra word. Tachshir kol Shu Tamei Mitzitz. And if I have a garment, if I have jewelry, made up of any amount, it's going to be tame, and there is no minimum shear. We know that from the tzitz. The tzitz is only 2 inches wide. Now, something is both woven and jewelry. It's a composite. So how do I know that that's going to be susceptible to tumah, even at any shear? So, based on the pasuk of kol kli ma'aseh, which is from the parsha of Klei Midyan. After going to war with Midyan, we came back with it from war, and we brought back spoils from war. And from the pasuk of Kol Kli Ma'aseh, I now know that if it's a composite of jewelry and something which is woven, it will be susceptible to tumah. So he says that pasuk is by Midyan. We learn it based on Gzeira Shava. Good. We're now on the top of Samech Dalman Aleph, and here we begin. Mosaf Sak Ala Beged Shetameh Misham Arik. We said that when it comes to sackcloth, sackcloth is more susceptible to tumah than that of something which is woven. Atu beged lav arigu. The Gemara says, I don't understand. If it's a beged, isn't it woven? So hachi kamer most of sackcloth la beged afa pisheino arig tame. The Gemara corrects the last point of the brisa. Even though the sackcloth is not woven. Now, I'm not exactly sure how the sackcloth is manufactured, to be honest. I'm not sure what the processing is of the sackcloth, but apparently, it's not a woven item. It's kind of just like goat hair, kind of meshed together. So even though it's not woven, it's susceptible to tumah. So Lamai Chazir, the Gemara says, okay, but if I have a couple strands of goat hair, why should it be susceptible to tumah? Remember, one of the baseline halachas of tumah is that it has to have some sort of functional use. What functional use does a couple strands of goat hair have? I'm Rav Yochanan Shekein Ani Kolei Shalosh Nimim B'Tola B'Tzavar Bita. Well, poor people, due to the fact that they don't have money to buy any type of jewelry for the daughters, what they do is they take three strands of goat hair, they braid it together, and they use that as a necklace for the daughters. Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa now is going to cite a source for all this. Now, the Torah says that sack is susceptible to Tuma. Now these psukim in Vayikra, Perek Yud Aleph, is in reference to Tumas Mace. How do I know that it's going to, that stock is also going to include hair used for a harness of an animal and the underbelly of the animal, meaning that they take goat hair and they basically use it to twine and to tie the saddle to the animal. And how do I know that these are susceptible to tuma tamalomer osak? What if I use twine as a simple rope or something that's twine which is going to be used as a measuring string? Tamalomer sak, masak tava va'arig, I've called tava va'arig. It needs minimal processing. What's minimal processing? It has to be spun and it has to be woven. So in other words, if I just take goat hair and use it as a string, or use it as a measuring string, that's not enough. It has to be spun and woven. And tava v'arik, spun and woven. Hare u'amer b'meiz v'chol kli or, sorry, that was by sheretz, I apologize. I said that was by meiz, that was wrong. That was by sheretz. Now we turn to v'chol kli or v'chol ma'ase izim. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go to the psukim in Parshas Pinchas, and we're going to point out that we're going to basically generate the same exact halacha, but not by Tumas Sheretz, but rather by Tumas Meis. Look, let's make the following argument. It's susceptible to Tumah by Sheretz, as we talked about a moment ago. And now, as we're dealing with right now, it's also susceptible to Tumas Meis, Keshetime B'Sheretz. Lo Time Ela Tava V'Arig, Av Keshetime B'Meis, Lo Time Ela Tava V'Arig. So the Gemara says, so what's the argument? The argument is going to be, look, by Sheretz, we said that it needs minimum processing in order for it to be Tameh, and that's by Sheretz, which is a lighter Tumah. So by Tumas Meis, which is a stronger Tumah, it's a harsher Tumah, for sure it's going to need minimum processing. Hain, the Gemara says, is that correct? Look, we'll be tame by Tumas Sheretz, but Tumas Sheretz in general is more mekel. But does that mean that we're going to be more mekel by Tumas Meis, which is more chamer? Tamalamar beged v'or, beged v'or, l'gzer shava, nemar beged v'or b'sheretz, v'nemar beged v'or. The mace, ma beged v'or, hamor b'sheretz, lo tima ela tava v'arig, af beged v'or, hamor b'mace, lo tima ela tava v'arig. So the Gemara finally yields. Look, it's not going to be based on a logical argument. It's not a kavachomer. It is a gzeirah shava. We have the words beged b'or by Tumas Sheretz. That's in Vayikra, Parsha Shmini. We have the words beged v'or by Tumas Meis. That's in Parshas Pinchas by Klei Midyan. So just like in one, we're going to say that goat hair is going to be susceptible, but it needs minimum processing of spinning and weaving. So too, by Tumas Meis, same story. Uma beged v'oram or b'meis tamei kol ma'ase izim, af beged v'oram or b'sheretz tamei kol ma'ase izim. We're talking about anything which comes from the goat. Ainli ala davar haba min ha'izim, inan l'rabas davar haba mizan av asusim, mizan av apara. How about not goat hair, but horse hair? Meaning you take the strands of hair that come from the tail of a horse, or you take the strands of hair that come from the tail of a cow. And I, again, minimal processing. Tamalamar osak. So we have, it's generated from the Torah when the Torah says the words osak. Sak, of course, being a reference to sackcloth, the goat hair. But we have the extra O, and O is a ribui. It comes to include v'afikta lekukle v'chavak. So the Gemara says, now, that O, didn't you use it earlier to include the goat hair that's used to tie the saddle to the underbelly of the animal? Hanimilim ikamad delesi gzer shava. The Gemara says, yes, we did. But that was prior to the gzer shava. Hashadasi gzer shava, I aser lei. But now that we have gzer shava, I don't need the drasha anymore of osak, because I learned it now through the gzer shava. I now have that drasha of osak free and clear. What am I going to do with the drasha? Include it to teach me to include hair of the horse tail and hair of the cow tail. The ainli ala b'sheretz. Now I only know that the hair of a horse and the hair of a cow's tail is susceptible to tumah by sheretz, by tumah sheretz. But tumah's meis minayim v'dinu. So the Gemara again is going to try to use it a kal v'chomer. Tame be meis v'tame b'sharetz makish t'me b'sharetz asadavar haba mizanav hatzutz mizanav hapara kema se'izim afkish t'me be meis asadavar haba mizanav hatzutz mizanav hapara kema se'izim. So the argument is, look, if it's going to be susceptible by t'me b'sharetz, it'll also be susceptible to t'me b'sharetz. The Gemara says, Hain, is that accurate? Is that a good way to describe the argument, the logical argument? Im hiba b'tum ha-zerif, shihi meruba, narbe b'tum ha-shiva, shihi mu'atis. Look, tum ha-sheretz is common. It's common because shratzim are all over the place. Dead shratzim are to be found everywhere. And it's just tum ha-zerif. Tum ha-mase is not as common relative to the sheretz. Obviously, people die. And obviously, Tumas Mace is generated, but it's not as common as Tumas Sheretz. So, Tam Lamar, so in other words, you can't really build a Kavachomer from something which is common to something which is not as common. So the Gemara says, Tam Lamar, Begad V'or, L'Gzer Shava. So once again, we're going to go back to the fact that there's a Gzer Shava. V'Nemar, Begad V'or, B'Sheretz, V'Nemar, Begad V'or, B'Mace, Ma Begad V'or, Ha'omer, B'Sheretz, Asa Davar, Haba, Mizanav, Asus, U Mizanav, Apar, Kemasi, Izim, Av Begad V'or, Ha'omer, B'Mace, Asa Davar, Haba, Mizanav, Asus, Mizanav, Apar, Kemasi, Izim. Just like we are going to make a ribuy of horse hair and cow hair by Tumas Sheretz, the Gzer Shava now is going to transport that halacha and move it over to Midyan as well. So, we're up to now the point where I get to summarize. Essentially now, we know that goat hair is susceptible to tumma. Once the goat hair is matted and made into a beged, so it's susceptible to tumma. What we're coming to learn right now is that even if the goat hair is not matted into clothing, even if the goat hair is used as strands, and to hold the saddle under the belly of the animal, it's going to be susceptible to tumma as well. We also know that hair taken off the tail of a horse, or hair that's taken off the tail of a cow, is also going to be susceptible to tumma. Again, if it's used with minimal processing, it's susceptible to tumma. How do I know both of these points? We learn it from a ribui. One ribui found in Parsha Shratzim, which is in Parsha Shmini, and the other one, which is in Parsha Pinchas, by Clay Midyan. And the Gemara says that whatever is true by one is going to be true by the other. How do I know that? Based on Gzer Shava. The Gzer Shava opens the port between the two parshios. So whatever halacha is included in sheretz is going to be included in mace. And whatever halacha is included in mace is going to be included in sheretz as well. And now the Gemara is going to spend just a couple of minutes talking about how strong the Gzer Shava is. You remember back in Masechta Nida, the Gemara there gave us the rules of Gzer Shava. Gzer Shava is strengthened if the word that's used to create the Gzer Shava is unnecessary. It's a superfluous word, which means that the Torah could have made its point without using the word. If that word now is free and clear, that's what the Gemara refers to as it being mufna. Mufna means basically free and clear. So now every Gzer Shava needs two words, right? The same word being used in two parshios in the Torah. If both times the Torah uses that word, it's mufne, the word that's being used is superfluous, what you've created now is a double bond gzera shava, right? For those of you who remember your chemistry days, right? It's a super gzera shava, meaning, and it's so strong, says the Gemara, that even if you have a kashi, even if you have a strong question, the Gemara says, we're going to ignore the question based on the strength of the gzera shava. If, however, in only one of the two locations, the word that the Torah uses is mufne, that's a good gzereshava, but not a great gzereshava. How do I differentiate between good and great? Good meaning that if I have a kasha, if I have a strong logical argument, it can upset and perhaps even upend the gzereshava. That's what the Gemara calls mufne mitzad echad. And then the worst gzereshava is where in both occasions the Torah needs to use that word, so it's not superfluous. This is what's called a gzera shava that's not mufna at all. And that, everybody agrees, is a gzera shava which, with a simple question, you can upend that gzera shava.
If gzera shava coming from Moshe Messina, right. It's either from Moshe Messina.
Right, or it's not from Moshe Messina. So some say, first of all, question is excellent. Some say that the gzera shava that we have, the Masorah that we have, is not necessarily where it is in the Torah, but how many Gzer Shavas there are in the Torah, and then it's our job to basically figure out where the Gzer Shava actually is. That's one suggestion, but I don't remember off the top of my head where that's from, but I remember one of the Rishonim suggests that. But the question is very good. Umufne, the Gemara says, and this Gzeira Shava that we're discussing right now, to teach us the halachas of goat hair that's used to tie the saddle, and horse hair and cow hair, this Gzeira Shava is Mufne, the Ilav Mufne, Iklamifrach, Malasher Shekematame Bechadasha. And the Gemara says, and you know how we're going to, had it not been Mufne, you know how you're going to break up this Gzeira Shava, because look, Sheretz is going to give off Tumah, even if I have a piece of Sheretz, even if the piece of Sheretz that remains is only the size of a lentil bean, it nevertheless is going to be a source of Tumah. By mace, that's not true. By mace, you need a kezias of mace. So you know that the halachas of the two are not the same. So had it not been a strong Gzeira Shava, easily we could have questioned the link between the two. So the Gemara says, La'ai, yes, you are correct. Afnuye mufne. Because in Parsha Shmini, Sheretz is mentioned right next to Shechvat Zera. Look, I know that by Shechvat Zera, which is an avatuma, it will be metame or kli or, right? Beged v'or, so too the sheretz also is going to be metame beged v'or. So I see that the words beged v'or are not necessary when it comes to tumah sheretz. V'akati mufne mitzad echad. Good. So all I've done now is I've freed up the beged v'or by sheretz. But remember, it's a gzera shava, which means that there are two points to the gzera shava. Now we have to go to clay midjan, and somehow we're going to have to argue that by clay midjan as well, the beged v'or over there is also mufne. Now the Gemara says, now there is an opinion out there that says that if it's mufne mitzad echad, it's a good gzera shava. But that's one opinion, and not everyone subscribes to that. And some are of the opinion that in order for gzera shava to be totally foolproof or pircha proof, it needs to have a gzera shava which is mufne mishnei tzadim. So Michael, I'm Amos, so the Meis Nami Afnoi Mufnes, so the Gemara says, good. So let's go to Clay Midyan, and I'll show you that by Clay Midyan, which is Tumas Meis, the word Begavor there as well is Mufna. Michti Meisit Kishl Shechva Zera Dichsi Vanoge V'chol Tami Nefesh O Isha Shir Teitzim Mimene Shechva Zera. Ksi V'Shechva Zera V'chol Begav V'chol Or Begad Vor Dekatz Rechmana B'Meis Lamali. And so here's where the Gemara says it. Because we know that Tumas Meis is right next to Shechva Zera. And we know Shechva Zera includes Begad V'or. So we already know that Meis includes Begad V'or. So now we're left to, so we already know that. So why by Clay Midyan does the Torah over there use the words Begad V'or? So now I have a gzera shava, which is mufne mishnei tzadim. Beged v'or is used by tumas sheretz. Beged v'or is used by tumas meis. In both occasions, it is unnecessary. It's superfluous. So why is it there? To create now this unbreakable gzera shava between the two. Dekas rachmana b'meis, l'amali shema min alaf, nu yay. Good. Okay, that was one sentence of the Gemara. It just happened to have lasted an amud. The Vinakriv is Karban Hashem Asher Matzah Kli Zahav Atzadav Asamit Tabas Agil V'Kumaz. As long as we mention Kli Midyan, the Gemara is going to give a little bit of drush regarding the Parsha of Kli Midyan. The Torah says, by after having gone to battle and defeated the Midyanim, and by the way, why did we go to battle? Because it was the Nishay Midyan, the women of Midyan, who came over, enticed the Jewish people to be Ovid Avodah Zarah through their lewd behavior. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Moshe, put together a squad, a troop, and go out to Midyan and wage war against Midyan, and we did. All right, this is all found in the Parshas Matos. And then we come back from war, and we bring back the spoils of war. And included in the spoils of war is the jewelry that was worn by the women, the same women who were used to entice us to be Ovid Avodah Zarah. V'nakriv is Karban Hashem Asher Matzah Kli Zahav. And the Torah goes on to describe Atzadah, bracelets, Vitzamid, Tabas, Agil, V'Kumaz. Now some of these are easy to translate, and some of these are difficult to translate, and the Gemara will help us translate some of the more obscure jewelry that we brought back from the spoils of war. Amar Avalazar Agil Zed Tefushal Dadin. Now, a gil is some sort of, it's like a bra, but a metal bra worn by the women of Midian. Kumas, zel deful shal peis arechem, and it was worn in the private area of the women of Midian. Am Rav Yosef, ihachi haine demetargamin on machoch. Now Rav Yosef says, I know Targum. I've mentioned this many times. Rav Yosef is the Targum, meaning, not the Targum on Chumash, the Targum on Chumash is Unklus, but then when you get to Navi, Rav Yosef was responsible for writing Targum, so you're going to find very often that Rav Yosef is the one who's always going to point out to Targum, meaning he had a special affection and connection with Targum. So Rav Yosef says that if you look at the Targum on the word Kumaz, Stu, I see you're checking, you're fact-checking over here. I like that. So so if you look at Targum on Kumaz, you're going to see that the Targum of the word Kumaz is Machuch. Now, that's Aramaic, so I don't know how much that's going to help us. But the word Machuch, Davra HaMevili DeGichuch, something that which leads to silliness, to...
Levin.
Right, and I was going to say, it's not happiness, it's, you know, it's being lightheadedness. Thank you. So Amale Rava Migufe DeKrash Mamina. And Rava says, look, you can actually look at the pasuk itself, and you can see that the word kumaz is a reference to an article of jewelry that's worn in the private area of the woman, because the word kumaz can be understood as a contraction of kan, makom, zima, kumaz. Veitzav Moshe al Pekud Echayel. The Gemara continues now darshaning from these psukim in Klei Midjan. Moshe got angry, and his anger was as a result of the fact that, look, what did you just do? Meaning, we went to war against Midjan exactly for the reason that they got us to misbehave and to behave very lewdly. And now, you're going to bring back the jewelry? I'm a Rav Nachman, I'm a Rav Baravu, I'm a Lam Moshe Yisrael. Shema chazat l'kiv kolechem. And moreover, the Gemara says, what Moshe did is he suspected the soldiers. Meaning, why is it that you're coming back with that jewelry? That's very private jewelry worn by these by the Neshei Midjan. So why would you have that? Maybe, Moshe suggests, that you behaved improperly with them before you killed them. Their response was, the lo nifkad mimenu ish. Now, on the simplest level, what that means is, nobody died in battle. But lo nifkad mimenu ish, Rashi explains, last Rashi on the Amud, lo nechzar midas Yehudas. Nobody did not behave like a Jew. I know that was a double negative, but you understand, everyone behaved totally appropriately. All soldiers behaved appropriately. Amal hem imken kapar lama. So then, Moshe says back to the soldiers, so why you bring back the jewelry? And I forgot to mention that one of the reasons that they brought back the jewelry as a form of kapara. So, why do you need a kapara? So, im kapara lama amru lo im midia aver yatsanu midi hirahur lo yatsanu. So the soldiers said, look, we didn't misbehave, but let's be honest. We thought about it. Meaning, we're at war, they're the women, they're inappropriately dressed. So let's be honest, we thought about it. But that's as far as it went. We didn't go any further than that. But the kapara is going to be on the hirhurim, on the actual thinking. So, v'nakriv miyad, v'nakriv is karban Hashem, and Moshe received, he accepted, he said, good. Tandebe Rav Yishmael, mimnei ma'atzuch l'yisrael shabosa dor kapara. Mimnei shezanu einehem min ha'erva. The Bryce over here is going to reiterate what we just learned, that the kapara was not for anything they did. They did nothing wrong, but they looked. Zanu einehem min ha'erva. Right? Zanu from Rashi says, lashon mazon, meaning they ate it up, but not literally speaking, but their eyes ate it up. So Am Rav Sheshes, mimnei ma'amana, kasav tachshishin shebechutzim, tachshishin shebefnim, a lesson that was already taught to us back in the Gemara in Brachos, when we're discussing not to daven in front of Erva. And the Gemara over here, as long as we're in the parsha of Klei Midjan, the Gemara over here is going to reiterate the same point. By Klei Midjan, we're talking about the jewelry that's worn by the women in Midjan, both the external jewelry and that very private jewelry, the kumas. And the Torah mentions those jewelry side by side as if it's the same. And the Gemara says, yes, it is. Lom l'chakal, mistakal ba'etz b'ketana shal isha, ki ilu mistakal ba'makam atorfa. You look at a woman, And even if you're looking at the pinky of a woman, but you're doing so in order to get benefit from looking at that woman, it's ki'ilu, says the Gemara, you're looking at makam haturfa, the very private area of a woman. So the isser of istaklus, the isser of looking at a woman for purposes of satisfying a man's desire and temptation, is going to be usser regardless of what area of the body the man looks at. We now continue with the next Mishnah. Yotze isha bechute seyar, beimishla beimishol chaverta beimishol behema. A woman can go out with Shabbos with, I'm going to use words which I don't know really if the Mishnah means, but hair extensions, right? Now I'm certainly not going to use the word shetel, even though it could be that that's what the Mishnah is referring to. But I'm not particularly sure. And if time permits later on this morning, we'll talk more about that. If shetel is a fair representation, I'll tell you this though. From Rashi, it's not. It's pretty clear from Rashi. We're not talking about a shetel. We're talking about just simply weaves that women put into their hair. Maybe they're thinning hair. And so what they're doing is just putting some sort of weave into their hair. Chute seyar, they could use human hair. And beimishla, beimishal chaverta, whether it's hers or whether it belongs to a friend. Beimishal behema, or whether it belongs to an animal. Okay. Cosmetically, I don't know how appealing that is, but it's not for me to say. Uvetov tafosu v'sarvitim is mashein tfur. Now, the tov tafosu sarvitim, not the first time we discussed it. If you go back to the beginning of the perek, we already spoke about the totafos and the sarvitim. These are kind of like straps and strands that come off of her head covering. And if you remember the first Mishnah, we said that a woman cannot go out with these items, but that's when they're not stitched onto their head covering. But our Mishnah now is talking about when she can go out with them, and that's going to be when they're stitched onto their head covering. Totafos and sarvitim is mashin tfurin. The kavel of the peah. Now, kavel is some sort of wool cap, or peah nachris. Now, peah nachris over here would seem to indicate that we're talking about a shetel, a wig. A kavel of peah nachris, so the wool cap and the peah nachris, those items she can go out into the chatzer, into her courtyard. Now, you remember we discussed this in the first Mishnah, and we're going to discuss it at length right in just a moment, today's daf, which is that these items you can wear into the courtyard, but you can't go on beyond that point of time. I mean, you cannot wear it into the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, I'll come back. I'll discuss this in better detail in just a moment. Cotton stuffing. If she has, let's say, wax or pus coming out of her ear. So on Shabbos, what she could do is she could stuff her ear up with the cotton stuffing. Let's say she's got some sort of corn or bunion on her foot, and she just wants to pad her shoe. Put an insole into her shoe, that she may do. And a sanitary napkin in order to collect the dam nida, so that a woman is allowed to go out with it on Shabbos as well. The pilpul, the gelga melech, pilpul, a peppercorn. She puts it in her mouth, explains Rashi, because she's got bad breath. So to fight and combat the bad breath, so she puts the peppercorn into her mouth, and she's allowed to go out with that on Shabbos. That's not considered carrying. Over Gilgal Melech. Gilgal Melech, Rashi explains, is that she's got a toothache. And apparently putting a wad of salt on the tooth is going to be a remedy for that toothache. B'chol davar shenitein l'toch piyah v'vash lo titein l'chatchila b'Shabbos. Now, you can't put it in for the first time on Shabbos. It has to be inserted into her mouth before Shabbos, but once inserted, so she can go out with it on Shabbos. V'imnafa lo tachzir. Now, if it falls out, so she can't put it back into her mouth on Shabbos. Shein toteves shein shel zahav. Now, Rashi gives two explanations over here. I'm just going to stick with Rashi's first pshat, where it's talking about a false tooth made up of gold. Okay? She lost a tooth, and much like is done nowadays, although modern dentistry is a little more cosmetically pleasing. Nowadays, we use actual teeth that look like teeth, false teeth that look like teeth, but back in the good old days, right, they took a gold tooth, and they, instead of, in the absence of a tooth, they put a gold tooth in there. Rebbe Matir v'chachamim osrim. So Rebbe says it's okay, she can go out with it on Shabbos, and the chachamim say it will be usher for her to go out with a gold tooth on Shabbos. Obviously, this particular tooth that we're discussing is not bonded into her mouth. It's obviously something which, you know, like, right, it's temporary. Now, a number of things to discuss over here. Number one, it says that she can't put these things in for the first time on Shabbos. Right? The peppercorn, the wad of salt that she puts into her mouth, she can't put it in for the first time on Shabbos. Why not? So the pshat I thought... So the pshat I thought is that it's because it's refuah. And in fact, not only did I think that, but I'm happy to tell you that Tosos thought that as well. Well, at least one of the Balei Tosos. You can take a look at the second Tosos on the Amud, where he discusses. One of the Balei Tosos. The reason why a woman cannot put in the wad of salt into her mouth, into her aching tooth, is because it's refuah. And as we've discussed time and again, refuah is usur on Shabbos. Because of the concern that if you're going to engage in medicine, you're going to have to grind up the medicine, and grinding is a malach on Shabbos. So the rabbis made a gzera that you're not allowed to practice any form of, you're not allowed to use any type of medication on Shabbos. Obviously, we're talking about somebody who is not critically ill. Kevin de la Rafuahu. Velinira, or Velonira, the Imkain, afal amalotachzer. Now Tosfos says, look, that may be the pshat of one Magid Shir here, and it may be the pshat of the Balei HaTosfos. Obviously the Balei HaTosfos is going to be slightly more regarded, but Tosfos says, I don't think that's correct. This is not about refuah. Now interestingly, why not? So Tosfos argues, because Amar Bepek Basu de Erevin, because we're going to learn later on, much later on, end of Shabbos and the end of Erevin, Machzir Ritia B'Migdash, Avalo b'medina. We're going to learn that. If you put a bandage on before Shabbos, a bandage that has an ointment on it, so if it falls off, you can't return it on Shabbos. But there's a very real concern that you're going to be smoothing out the ointment, which is a malach on Shabbos. But outside of that, there's no problem with replacing medicine on Shabbos. You can't take medicine on Shabbos for the first time, but a replacement of medicine should be okay. So if this wad of salt is an issue of refuah, so if you put it in before Shabbos and it falls out, you should be able to put it right back in again. So Tosfos says, I don't think the issue over here is refuah at all. So now, if the issue is not refuah, what is the issue? Why is it that on Shabbos, a woman can't put, or a man for that matter, can't put a wad of salt into her mouth before Shabbos, she could put it in, letting it stay over Shabbos to give her some sort of comfort. But on Shabbos, for the first time, she can't put it in. And furthermore, if it falls out, she can't put it back in again. Why not? Martin. So, the concern is that maybe she wants to carry it from point A to point B. And she knows that she can't pick it up in her hand and she can't carry it out in her hand. And so, maybe what she'll do as a haram, as a deception, is she'll put it in her mouth and she'll walk to get to the other point, and then she'll take the salt out of her mouth. And now she has successfully transferred the salt from one place to another place on Shabbos. So the issue over here is harama.
Meaning, agreed.
Meaning, is it going to be a malacha d'araisa? No, agreed. But, okay, it's harama. Well, the parish there, kohanap delel, moch sheba'azna v'shasam dela, astern la tela chachila. Now, it comes out that if this is a correct pshat, which Tosfos believes it is, and this is not an issue of refuah, so then the halacha of the Mishnah, that if it falls out, you can't put it back in again, that would be true not just by the wad of salt that she puts in her mouth, but any of these things mentioned in the Mishnah. The wad of cotton that she put in her ear, right? The wad of cotton that she puts on her shoe. Meaning, as long as you put it in before Shabbos, fine. But once on Shabbos it falls out, she can't put it back in again if the issue is an issue of harama. The im tamar im kein hechashar lakam. Okay, fine. So there are two mahalchim, two approaches that Tosfos has in terms of why it is a woman cannot put the Gilgal Melech into her mouth on Shabbos, or if it falls out, she can't replace it. Pshat number one of Tosfos is Rabbeinu Poras, which is it's an issue of refuah, which if that's the correct pshat in the Mishnah, means that that would only be limited to the Galgal Melech, which is, that's the refuah. Meaning the cotton in your ear, that's not refuah. That's just simply to collect the pus. But so that would mean that the halach only would be for Gilgal Melech. Or the second pshat in Tosfos is that the Chachamim made a ban, a gzeira, out of concern of harama. And if the concern is harama, that really she is subterfuge, trying to get an item from point A to point B, and instead of carrying it in her hand, which she knows she can't do, she'll put it in her mouth, she'll stick the cotton in her ear. But in other words, she really is trying to get it from point A to point B, so therefore the gzera derabanan would be for everything we mentioned in the Mishnah, not just the Gilgal Melech. Okay? Which means that she could put it in before Shabbos, but on Shabbos she can't put it in for the first time, and if it falls out, she can't replace it. Okay. Let's continue now with the Gemara Tzricha Diyashmin and Didam Mishum Delamais. Now we're talking about the hair weaves. The Mishnah says that she could use hair weaves on Shabbos, whether it's her own hair, that obviously she cut out and now is using as a hair weave, or it's somebody else's hair, or it's horse hair. And the Gemara says the Mishnah needed to make all these points. Utzricha. Diyashmin and Didam Mishum Delamais. Now her own hair is not discussing Torah, Aval Chaver to Demais Emala. But maybe someone else's hair. Who would put on someone else's hair on their head? Okay. I know. Now, even her friend's hair, but at least that's human hair. But horse hair is animal hair. So therefore they're all needed. Now, when a woman is putting this weave into her hair, so it's got to be hair that matches her age. So in other words, if she is an older woman, a woman of a certain age, you like how I avoided using a number. I know. It's like real professional work over here. So if she's of a woman of a certain age, so she should be using as a hair weave, hair of a woman of a certain age. And if she's a younger woman, so then she should be using hair of a younger woman. Now, Bishlam is the Kena Bishal Yada Shevachula, Eldi Yalda Bishal Zakena, my Ganai Hula. So the Gemara says, I'm happy to hear the halacha, but who would do it? What young woman would be using as a hair weave women of an elderly age? No one would do that. The Gemara says, you're right, I did the Tana Zakena Bishal Yalda, Tana Nami Yalda Bishal Zakena. And the Gemara says, yeah, but you know how these braces work, the braces love symmetry. Yeah. So, we like the parallelism, so that's, you're right, but you're absolutely right. Bekavu peyanachris lechatzer. Now, the wool cap and the peyanachris, the wig, can be worn into the chatzer, but not any point beyond that. Amarav. Kol she'asru chacham amatzeis bo l'rishos rabim, asru latzeis bo lechatzer. Now, look, here's the halacha of Rav. I mentioned this in the beginning of the perek, but here we are now, and Rav is saying it very clearly. And the truth of the matter is that even without Rav, it's pretty evident from the Mishnah. Look, the Mishnah has gone through now a long list of things that a woman cannot wear on Shabbos. For fear that she'll take it off. For fear that it'll slip off and she'll pick it up. For fear that she'll go to the mikvah and she'll have to untie it and carry it. So there's a long list of things that a woman cannot wear into the Rishus HaRabim. Not only can she not wear into the Rishus HaRabim, she can't wear into the Chatzar as well. And this is a further discussion, which is beyond the scope of our daf. She can't even wear it in the privacy of her own home. Okay, maybe. But in other words, look, the Chachamim basically say to the women, look, women, Shabbos, don't put on jewelry. Done. And we don't want you to get into the habit of wearing jewelry at all. So don't wear into the Rosh Hashanah Rabbin for the rabbinic concerns of it may fall off and you may end up carrying it. And don't even wear in the chatzar as well, even though you're in the privacy of your own courtyard. Remember, courtyard back then had walls around it. Doesn't matter. In other words, I don't want you to get in the habit of wearing these types of jewelry and ornaments. And we're going to make an exception. Actually, two exceptions. Chutz mikavol peyer nachris. With exception to kavol peyer nachris, which Rashi pointed out in the beginning of the perek, these things can be worn by the women, but only in the courtyard, not beyond the courtyard. Okay? And why not? And the reason why not is, I'm sorry, not why not, why yes? Why can they wear them in the chatzir? Because we don't want the women to become totally unattractive to their husbands. So therefore, you're allowed to wear them, these two items in the chatzir. But not beyond that point in time. Rabbi Anani bar Sosom Mishmei de Rabbi Shmuel Amar Akol Kekavol. Now, the Gemara brings in the opinion of Rav Anani bar Sason. I don't know who he is, but he sounds Sephardic. Yeah. Which, of course, is a silly statement I could make, but it's okay. I make sillier statements. So he says that it's true by any of these jewelries that we've been discussing from the beginning of the sixth perek. A woman can wear them in the chatzer, but not into the Rishos HaRabim. Now the Gemara says this opinion is not supported by the Mishnah, Tanan. Bekavol v'peyer nachris l'chatzer. Now Bishlam l'Rav Nicha, I'm sorry, l'Rav Nicha, el l'Rav Anani bar Sason kashya. How is Rav Anani bar Sason going to learn our Mishnah? The Gemara's response is, he won't learn our Mishnah. He won't agree with our Mishnah. Rav Anani bar Sason, Mishmei d'man kamalei, Mishmei d'Rav Yishma b'Rav Yossi. He quotes it in the name of Rav Yishma b'Rav Yossi, Rav Yishma b'Rav Yossi, Tanahu. Upalig, and Rav Yishma b'Rav Yossi is a Tana, and therefore Rav Anani bar Sason, although he may be an Amora, he's actually espousing the opinion of a Tana who argues with our Mishnah. Okay, and now we get to a question which, Hedy, you asked me a long time ago. I ignored you, but now is the appropriate time to reiterate the questions and to give somewhat of a response. And you said to me, well, how come our women go out with jewelry on Shabbos? Meaning, our Mishnah from the beginning of this perek, which started back on Daf Nun Zayin, and we're 8 Dafim into this perek, right? Today's Daf is Samach Daled. Okay, my math is a little bit off, but that's fine. No, not so bad. And so, right, and we're a week into this perek, and so now, for a week, you've probably been wondering, right, a woman can go out with jewelry on Shabbos, and our women do. And we seem to be ignoring a perek of Shas. We seem to be.
Well, it's not
a regal,
it's just a
body. Yeah. Okay, now you're already anticipating the answer. And furthermore, to compound the question, we have the opinion in our Gemara of Rav, and Rav says that not only can any of these articles of jewelry be worn in the Rishos HaRabim, they can be worn in the Chatzer as well. Meaning you're in a private domain, and you still can't wear these items. So now, according to Rav, and the only exception would be the Peah Nachris and the Kavol. But short of those two exceptions, everything else cannot be worn, neither in the Rishos HaRabim nor in the Chatzer. So now I'm just compounding the question. So how is it now that women in our day and age, and I don't mean 21st century, I'm going back to the 13th century, I'm going back to the 12th century, I may go back even earlier than that, how is it that all of our women are wearing jewelry on Shabbos? So take a look and say, this Tosfos over here is going to respond to this question. Okay, you may not fall in love with the answers of Tosfos, but it is the direct response to this question. Rav Anani b'Rabbi Sason amar akol kekavol, v'nira, d'halacha k'Rabbi Anani. So first of all, Tosfos says that we have a machlokis between the Tanayim, our Mishnah, and Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi, who the Mishnah doesn't even quote, but Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi, in that, according to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi, a woman can wear everything in a chatzir, she just can't wear it onto the Rishos HaRabim. And so number one, Tosfos starts off by saying, the halacha is like Rabbi Anani bar Sason. Medam Remil Sman Shmei to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel Tanuhu Upalek. Okay. So that's starting point number one for the discussion. Now, over here we're talking about an Isser Derabbanan. Meaning, remember, what are we worried about? Maybe the woman's going to take it off, and maybe she'll carry a Rishos HaRabim. But that's all maybe, meaning it's Gzera Derabbanan. So here, our issue is an Gzera Derabbanan. We have a machlokis regarding Gzera Derabbanan. So we could accept the more lenient position, which is that all jewelry can be worn in a chatzer. Okay. Now, when Rav Hanani said that it's mutter to carry in a chatzir, even if the chatzir doesn't have an eruv. The bechatzir merev is like a shem chiddush. Im kain nashim utars leis kashet bebayis uvechatzir b'tabaos uvetachshitin. And therefore, a woman can go into her chatzir with rings and all forms of jewelry. But this only gets us to a certain point. So far in Tosfos, what we have now concluded is that a woman on Shabbos can go into her chatzir wearing jewelry. But a chatzir is a reshus hayachid. Our women, in our day and age, and again, it's not a 21st century discussion. For hundreds of years, women have even gone beyond the chatzir with jewelry, and so now Tosfos has to respond to that. How do they go beyond the chatzir? Now, please remember, a chatzir is a reshus hayachid. But the woman will go beyond the reshus hayachid. Now, again, in all of our Jewish communities that we live in nowadays, we tie a string around our cities, and we make those into a reshus hayachid, one large reshus hayachid. So for us nowadays, we live in eruv, in gated communities, in eruv communities. So for us, I understand. But you go to Flatbush, you go to, right, Muncie, Eruv, no Eruv? It depends on when. Okay, but you have, right, depends on who you ask. But you go to Flatbush, and in other words, and you go to places where there's no Eruv. So in other words, once you leave the privacy and the comfort of your home, you're now no longer in a chatzir, no longer in a reshus yachid. So how do women do that? Uvetachshit ma'anu she'enlan reshus rabim gamor. So Tosfos now makes the following argument. We live in communities nowadays, says Tosfos, so this is 13th, 14th century, France, Germany. We live in communities where there's no real Rishus HaRabim. The Chol Rishus HaRabim Shalanu Karmelisi, because all of our Rishus HaRabim are just Karmelises. Shari Ein Mavo Shalanu Rechavas Yud Vavama. Our streets are not 16 amas wide. Velo Shishim Ribu Bokimbo. And we don't have 600,000 people walking through the streets. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam makes the argument, because we don't have a real Rishus HaRabim, and at best they're going out into a Carmelis, so now what essentially results from this is, you're basically walking out into a Chatzar without an Eruv. And a Chatzar without an Eruv, according to Rav Hanani Bar Sason, a woman is allowed to go out with that. Okay. Now, the truth of the matter is we ran out of time, but I want to go through more of this Tosfos. So tomorrow morning what we're going to do is I'm going to finish this Tosfos over here. More suggestions / explanation in terms of why it is women do go out with jewelry when our entire parak speaks to the idea that women cannot go out with jewelry. So we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, and then we'll continue, obviously, with tomorrow's daf. Rafur Shlema for Binyamin Zev ben Hakohen ben Rishon Rivka. V'chanani ben Hakashem Rav Tzakesh Baruch Zakeh Sol Aficha. Here we have Torah Mitzvah Shenema Anach Hafitza Matziko Yigdil Torah Biyadir.